Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I might whisper sometimes because today we're in an art gallery. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, how you doing?
This is Aaron Stella, and he's the project manager of this super awesome exhibit that we are currently visiting called Sexo. We are in the William Way Community Center in Philadelphia. Tell us, Aaron, what is this amazingness?
So the Sexo exhibit, we threw this up because we are trying to create new conversations about sexual realities in our communities here. We feel as though that people have very complicated relationships with their sex lives, and we seek to create more comfort and joy and love in those relationships between people, moving away from fear-based paradigms, thinking just about STDs that we might be able to transfer between each other, and more about the fun that we can have, getting back in touch with that, because it's very important for people. And when you do that, I think you can find a great way to love each other in more kinds of way that's just not about the sexual or about the bedroom department.
Wait, are you telling me that art can transform things? Are you telling me that art can have an effect on people?
I know, such a novel idea. So novel. One of the big things we like to talk about is that sex never ends in this Sexo exhibit. And so got its start, I'll say, back in 1992. There was a campaign called Sexo Latex, funded by federal dollars through GALAY, which is the, oh my goodness, I always do this, it is the Gay Alliance Latino AIDS Initiative. I believe that's what it is. It might be Awareness Initiative. Alicia Gonzalez will correct me. But three people, Peter Leon, Kevin Kendall Norris, and David Agosta, who was the founder of GALAY, came together to create sex-positive imagery that appealed to gay men, to basically create AIDS awareness. The second that three of their posters went up, they were taken down.
By
the federal government. They were taken down by bar owners, sex club owners, wherever they were appeared. They were the subject of a sexual harassment suit because the images were very striking. They were very sex positive. The one that probably got the most hullabaloo surrounding it was one of two gorgeous Latino men standing with each other naked. One behind the other is grasping his crotch with a giant vinyl glove. It's a fireman's glove. And the guy in front kind of has his arms up in a flexing pose. The guy behind is tearing a condom open with his teeth, a very controversial gesture at that time. So this really struck people. People who liked it kept the posters, and now they can be found in museums all across America, and even on eBay being sold for money.
So these posters, and they're actually behind us right now.
Yes.
These posters are 20 years old now.
Yes, they are 20 years old.
Which is amazing because I'm looking at them and like whoever shot them has like an amazing eye because they're timeless. Like they don't look dated at all.
I know. If you saw them today.
Yeah, I would assume that they were, you know, totally recent. It's actually kind of impressive because they're still super hot because there's a lot of like stuff from like the 90s early and before that safer sex stuff that is very obviously like of a time.
Yes.
And it kind of loses its oomph when you see it. Then you're just like, oh, that's not even applicable to me. Those dudes are like super old now.
Sure.
No, but they are sexy. And like, I think that's very scary because then like, we can't talk about sex in a sexy way.
Right. That's really funny that you say that. So right behind us, we have a number of quotes on the wall. And one of the quotes from David Agosta says, you know, in the absence of a language, we created a language of desire. And we talk about that in the Sexo team when we were coming up with this exhibit about what happened when suddenly the HIV/AIDS epidemic hit. And then there was all these used condoms 100% of the time campaigns that came out. That killed sex for a lot of people. It killed the eroticism behind that. And people thought, how do we do this anymore? So what you just said is very iconic. Like, how can we talk about sex in a sexy way again?
Can you speak to that a little bit more? Because I feel like for some folks, you know, especially if you grew up in the 90s, like that has always been the message. We don't understand what the idea was before that whole 100%, you know, all of the time condom use thing. What was going away? What was being taken over?
So I think because this was, I mean, it was an epidemic that devastated people. I know people who lost 20 plus of their friends in a matter of 6 months. Bars closed and were cleared out because of this, because of HIV and AIDS. And so you have a lot of people who are responding to a crisis. What happens in that crisis as you start creating these very fanatic measures, drastic measures to change the way that people have sex, because that becomes the object of evil in the scenario. That's how the virus is passed for the most part. So during the 90s, the relationship to sex was no longer about having fun, and it just became about having fun with the hippie movement, with the another civil rights movement coming about for LGBT folks. We were about having a sexual revolution, about people enjoying their bodies and loving each other and being intimate and finding meaning in that. Now, all of a sudden, we have to rethink that again in its nascence, as they were just as children almost, if you think about it. So now, I mean, I grew up in that era, but I was very young. I myself am HIV positive. I rarely used condoms, and I knew the risks. I got tested regularly. But I say this to you now because what was more meaningful to me was to have great sex with people. I was not concerned about the STDs, and I don't think that's a public health problem necessarily. I don't think that's a personal health problem. That was something that I sought in other people. And so one of the things we're trying to talk about is that while it's important to think about ramifications, it's also important to think about rewards and happiness and making sex a breezy, integrated part of your life that gives you enjoyment instead of trying to find substitutes for it.
I think you're hitting on a thing that is making some people's heads explode, because the conversations about sexuality, especially as they pertain to, you know, public education or, you know, talking to kids or et cetera, have to be so very like negative consequences, avoidance.
Absolutely.
Focused. But in reality, we aren't even addressing why do people have sex?
Right.
Like, what? So it's kind of like, to me, I think the parallel is like the drug war. Like you could go after the supply, you could go after the demands. And which is really going to be the best use of your resources, which is going to have the most casualties, and which is really going to have the best results for human beings.
I could talk to you all day about this. Yeah. And we also don't live in a culture where we think about comprehensive plans and programs. We don't think, okay, well, say the war on drugs. We think, okay, we're just going to bolster our police force and arrest everybody who has an iota of marijuana on them. Well, that doesn't work. We then overpopulate our prison systems, racial profiling begins, and now we've created an even bigger problem. Instead, what might be important, say, in the drug war, is to say, well, you know what, why are people selling drugs instead of getting jobs? Are there jobs available? Are we providing community services? What are their lives like? Do they have family issues? These same questions I could take and ask in the same space as sex life.
Mm-hmm.
What are your family relationships like? What is your economic life like? What do you do with your free time? How do you think about your life as it relates to sex? How do you think about your life as it relates to drugs? For me, as I was growing up here in Philadelphia, when I came here when I was 19, I would have loved to have gone to some services that talked about my family. HIV was the furthest thing from my mind. But that was the poster boy child for a disease as it surrounded sex. I loved having sex with men, and it did relate to my relationships with my family. And something I said when this exhibit had opened is that the one thing I got out of this, I have better relationships with my family now.
Interesting.
Yes.
And I also noticed a significant element of this exhibit is actually just getting to ask people about these things. Like, why is it that people have sex, and some of the questions that are up on the wall that people can engage with the exhibit, they can actually interact with it.
Yes.
There's the question of, can pleasure be meaningful, and how does sex make life more meaningful? And and there were a couple really interesting responses, and we'll go into that in a little bit, but I mean, there is not a single like doubled up answer. Like, I don't see any redundancy there at all. It seems like everybody gets something entirely different out of it. But like, how often does anybody even get asked those questions?
I mean, we were ecstatic having this opportunity to ask people these questions. I would have loved to have been asked these questions as I was growing up, as like becoming an adult and a young gay man, as a young gay woman or transgendered person. These are so important. And as you just noted, there's no repeats, no redundancy. We want to inspire uniqueness in people for them to say, you know what? It's not about doing what somebody else tells you to do. We don't want to be in the business of telling people what to do, telling them to wear condoms, telling them to take meds, telling them to have sex in a certain way. We're in the business of asking questions and for people deciding for themselves how they should live their lives. We're about education and awareness. And we think that, for me personally, I believe in the natural goodness of humankind. I also believe in the natural intelligence of humankind. And I think that if we ask questions and we're stewards to people, they will figure out a beautiful, creative way that will not only enhance their lives, but our lives to have sex better.
And I'm also, I should point out to people who can't see, there's like a whole lot of latex going on in this room.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's like a latex like paradise in there.
There are so many gloves that you could probably use to, I don't know, I feel like you could go up into a cow with some of those. Those are pretty significant.
That's actually exactly what they're used for.
Oh, well.
Those are cattle birthing gloves.
Oh, my Nebraska showing.
Yeah.
It's happening right now.
I'm from the South, too, and I have helped birth a few cattle in my day. And those are quite identical to what we're used. And up top, you see we have some sweeping, like, vinyl, you say, like, sheets that cover up, like, the ceiling up there. We have the three iconic posters we talk about, quotes on these shower curtain-like sheets, and then on the other wall, as you noted, we have questions where people can answer these questions with post-it notes. We're going to start archiving these questions, too, and thinking about what can we do with them to create change? What can we do? How can we use this to create awareness for people that don't just come to this exhibit?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And so the latex, is this intended to, like, change our relationship to condoms or latex in general, or what is the drive behind including so much?
Good question, and that's exactly the original intent of the Sexo Latex campaign. The three posters back in 1992 was to, instead of keeping to this narrow definition of latex equals condoms equals safe sex, which to most people meant equals less sex, worse sex. So the creators thought, well, let's expand the definition of latex. How can latex be fun? As like a swimming cap that somebody used diving into the pool, and you have the guy in one poster coming out of it as a glove grasping someone's crotch, which is really hot. You know, and then, you know, you have the gloves in here. Latex is also used in a lot of sex fetishist scenarios. And it's hot, and it has this, it can cling to the body and create this whole new persona. And that for people resonates. So you take that idea and then you apply it back to sex. How can we think about other ways, intimacy, that doesn't necessarily involve just a cock or a vagina? In fact, we have there's a quote on the wall that says, the point of using latex or vinyl elements was to simply point out that if you use your imagination, 90% of the time sex doesn't involve using a condom or a cock. It involves an approach, this moving in, this positioning and holding, a tongue, a mouth, ripping something open, and hands. I think people forget about that when they're having, like, when they're going in for some, like, a sexual encounter. It's not just about genital slapping together. It's all sorts of things. You and I, Timmerie, are having sex right now as we talk and exchange our fluids with one another. I know, I'm taking it back, too. I've waited for this moment all my life.
I love it. Okay, so I'm gonna play a little. I don't know if I really want to see Devil's Advocate. But I'm gonna say that there are kind of two minds about the whole normalizing condom use sort of thing. And it seemed like the prevailing viewpoint was for many years, you know, 100% of the time you use condoms, even if you've been with exclusively this person for 20 years and you've both been tested and there's nothing, etc. And if that is the normal, then we could get an entire generation where that is the normal, and then we reduce all this you know, the potential for any number of things that they don't want to have happen. And then on the other hand, there's this school of thought that, like, well, yeah, but that's actually not really what people do in real life. Mm-hmm. And so we need to address what people do in real life. And right. So it's sort of like these two, you know, like, but if we make it that we can force that normal, that will be what people do in real life. So what do you think about, you know, they can't really compromise those two. I mean, because one is so hard line. So
I get great. Awesome. That's an awesome question. And so there's been a lot of success in getting folks to use condoms. We could say right now, if I were to compare all the studies that are out there, we could say that about, you know, 50% of gay men, if not 80% in some cases, use condoms most of the time. Those numbers vary according to region, culture, kind of folks that live in various neighborhoods. But here's the thing. We're telling people to use condoms from a fear-based perspective. Use them because sex is about making sure, all right, you can have it, but you might get an STD. And that should be your number one concern. That's what the messaging has been like. Instead of saying, let's educate you about the ways in which STDs are transferred. Let's educate you about prevention tactics. Let's not tell you what to do. There, for HIV, again, I'm POS, I'm extremely healthy, I take antiretroviral medications, I'm undetectable. I don't use condoms. I don't use them at all. I haven't since I found out I was POS and I was on medication. So that might blow some people's minds. But I've yet to get a call back from anybody who I've had bareback sex with to tell me that they're HIV positive. I've yet to read an anecdote online to tell me that an HIV positive, undetectable guy gave HIV to somebody else. So I like to take a look at the reality instead of the fear-based narratives that exist out there for HIV prevention. The condom has become the merit badge for, I will say, particularly for gay men. If I wear this condom, I am abstaining from this lusty, it is the forbidden fruit of barebacking. I think that narrative is preposterous. I think that you don't have to have anal sex or oral sex all the time for your fulfillment, for one thing. Another thing is, too, that there are new methods for preventing disease. And this isn't just about preventing disease. That's see how, even myself, I'm just talking about disease prevention. What about, oh my God, you are so fucking beautiful. I just want to lay in bed with you and play and just be in your, like, aura and presence. What about that conversation? Why isn't that what people talk about and are excited about?
That's only okay in TV.
Right, where HIV isn't concerned, when it's between a man and a woman, and it's between a guy, there's always some sort of message that slithers in there about HIV prevention that's as old as the day is long. And that's because I said something to an older activist who I know, and who we stand at very opposite ends on the spectrum. He said to me, we don't need to educate HIV negative men about HIV medication and what it's like to be POS. We just need to get a strong message out there. I said, I think that we're fighting for the same thing, but we're doing it in different ways. If I was an older gay man who had fought for a lot of his life and had seen his friends die to get people to wear condoms, and then all of a sudden I read a report saying that however many percentage of men, young gay men, aren't using condoms anymore, I would probably fall to the pavement and beat my fists and gnash my teeth and think, what was all my years of prevention work for? But again, we're now back on prevention and disease. It's so hard to get away from that when we talk about sex these days.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I keep coming back to that thing that you said earlier where it was like the gay rights movement was just so young and it had just like this, I mean, it's like a kid and then, you know, like a terrible family tragedy befalls you.
Yeah,
and you're still really young. Yeah. But like the ultimate point is not to focus your entire life around that tragedy that happens in your childhood. The point is your life. And there's still like a bigger picture of like, I mean, okay, so this is a reality that we face. HIV, any number of other things are realities. But it is not what identifies us. It is not what makes us. And we cannot live our entire lives in reaction to it. So what is the ultimate point of our lives? And I think that most people would find the point of their life is not necessarily avoiding illness.
Right. Avoiding illness. And I mean, what does it mean to be ill in the first place? What does it mean to be sick? I think that I am healthier than most of my friends, frankly, on a comprehensive scale. I'm a very happy person. I'm a very healthy person. I work out. I eat well. HIV cohabitates in my body. It does not define my character. It does not define what kind of habits I have. It is a happenstantial thing to me. But it's still there, and it's important. I think that that's a good model for thinking about the way that people have sex. It's free, it's open, it's on my terms. I'm excited to have it. When I say it's free, it doesn't cost money, too. And this is something that we can do with each other to create love and trust. I think we have a culture where we're very much about, we have these barriers. We have the condom that exists metaphysically between us, and we must pay homage to that because people can hurt us. People can also enhance our lives. Sex positivity. Let's look at how sex enhances our lives and makes us a comprehensively better person. That's what we want to talk about through Sexo.
Love it. All right, so welcome back. I am now in what looks like sex church. That's what I'm gonna say. We're in the exhibit standing, and I would like to introduce you to someone else here in sex church. We're in the Sexo exhibit still. This is Alicia Gonzalez, who is the director of Galley, the aforementioned Galley that we don't know the acronyms for anymore because it doesn't matter. It's dropping. So welcome, Alicia. Tell me, where the hell are we?
So we're in Sex Church, also known as the Sexo exhibit at the William Wake Community Center. And I encourage people to come down here. It's up until June, the middle of June. And the piece that people, I think, need to know most of all is that it's intended to be very interactive. So we want to encourage people to come down and become part of the exhibit by doing a ritual of sorts, if you will, within the space. And also leaving their mark literally on the wall by leaving a comment, question, answer, feedback, response, joke, drawing on the wall that you know asks folks different questions about their views on sex in the broadest sense of the word.
So Aaron talked a little bit about some of these posters that are on the wall and why they're sexy. I want to hear, Alicia, why you think they're sexy.
Aside from the dripping jizz that's coming down the wall, aside from that part of it, I think they're sexy because, well, A, I know where they came from. So I know that it was a city-sponsored HIV prevention campaign that used this really hot, lovely men to portray images of, you know, quote-unquote healthy and sexy, safer sex. But they, to me, are just aesthetically beautiful. Like, I think that they look like art to me, right? They don't read in any sort of way other than that. I think that they're beautifully shot and they just ooze sex. I mean, everything about it to me is completely sexy. There's a vulnerability to them. There's a sweetness to them. There's a lust and a, you know, just all out. Yeah, we're going to, you know, have some sex today.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have some sex today,
and or we already had some sex today. Yeah, I am incredibly ecstatic, being that it was Galley that they specifically were looking for Latino models to use. So I think it's always important that we have folks who are reflective of the communities that we're serving and that we represent. So the fact that it's men of color, that it's sexy, provocative, sex positive. And covered in jizz is all the things that make it sexy to me.
Is that actually?
No comment.
Nice. Aaron, do you want to talk about your feelings about these posters anymore? Or do you feel like you... Okay.
If I had not been under the protection of my parents at the time when these came out, I would have stolen them and had jerked off to them plentifully in my time as a gay man. They would have seriously affected my relationship with sex, and I also probably would have known what condoms were at the time. I didn't have any sex education in my high school, nor did the dialogues about condoms at the time when I got to Philadelphia resonate with me. This would have been iconic. This would have lived in my mind and in my heart as something. Right now, I'm just like, holy God. I see them, and anybody who I've shown these posters to are like your reaction, like, oh, this must have been made in the past couple of years. That's what's so crazy about it. That's what's so progressive. I love it. I love it. These are gorgeous men doing the exact things. Like, this is what we seek. This is what we want. I'm glad that somebody had the wherewithal to be honest about that.
I'm also intrigued by the scenarios of the poster, because the one on the far right over here, there is a very stern looking young man coming out of a pool. And I'm curious by the things that are like, at first I thought this was a dildo. What is this little thing over here?
I think it's lube. That's what I think it looks like to me. And goggles, of course, because you don't want to get it in your eye. And condoms on, you know, in his bag. So, you know, he just took a little dip in the pool and he's coming out to go take a shower and get it on with one of the lovely asses in the photos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's both like a literal thing and also just sort of like
suggestion. It's a suggestion too. That's I think a good thing with these posters is that it's not just about the sex or the condoms. It's about the image. It's about whatever you want to make about this image, and how you find it hot could be in innumerable ways. In all the photographs, you see the condom is not the center of focus. Not at all. So that's, you know, again, in many HIV prevention campaigns in the past, it was like the condom is the focus. We kind of like worship this like oneness with it. This is like, actually, sex is about so much more. It's about so much more. And it's not just about cock.
Are there more posters in existence out there, like aside from these images?
No, there were just these three. There are certain outtakes that exist out in the world, but these were the ones that made it into print. And to be honest, the one in the middle seemed to be the most provocative and semi-controversial in the sense that it introduced this element of kink, which hadn't really been done, and to be honest, still hasn't really been done within the HIV world, right? HIV has become so medicalized. Sex has also just become about, you know, putting on the condom. And so to take it outside of those two elements, I think, was really shocking for folks. And that was the reason we chose specifically, as you can see all over, to use these black, really intense, I find to be gloves hanging. We didn't tell them to take them or not to take them. So people are inspired to do what they will with these. And it's provocative. It's, you know, as you can see, it tells a story in and of itself.
So if you have hopes and dreams for those gloves, where do you hope and dream that they went?
All over my body. Aside from all over my body, well, apparently they're going to be in a flower show, which is amazing. They're going to be in a flower show in Nashville, which is just insane. We really were not joking that we would love to have a fashion show made out of these gloves where folks are wearing just, you know, skirts and thongs and G-strings and harnesses made out of just these gloves. We didn't clearly pull that off in time, but we know where to get more. Part of the thing that is beautiful about Sexo, and we kind of have been saying internally that the O stands for open, we don't want there to be an end site, an end point, right? We want this to be something that lives on in its entirety for whatever people decide to do with it, because that is part of what is beautiful about sex, is the fact that it is imaginative and creative and beautiful and always changing, right? It doesn't have to be this boring, prescriptive way of having sex or thinking about ourselves as sexual beings, right? It is open. It is expansive. It's more than just the condom. It's more than just HIV. It's all of these things. So what we hope indirectly happens with Sexo is that people are given, as hokey as it sounds, but given permission to have fun again with sex and know that they can do whatever they'd like with their bodies when it's consensual, of course, and just have fun and explore.
And let's talk about this interactive element of it. So we've got questions up on the wall, and people have definitely been interacting with it. There are lots of answers that have been written on Post-its and put up on the wall. Let's talk about, do you have any favorites? Any favorite? What's your favorite question that's up here?
So one of the things that just came up recently when we just met was that somebody kind of challenged us on the question that we asked, which was around can pleasure be meaningful? And they wrote on there, define meaningful, which I thought was really interesting because it brought to light the fact that the privilege that we as the creators of this space have in selecting these particular questions, right? And how that in and of itself is framing the conversation in a particular way, but we had to start somewhere, right? But I love the fact that people are not just taking it at face value and are seemingly having fun with some of the answers that they're providing. Some of them are pretty in depth. Some of them are just simple yes, no answers.
But I can see a hell yes from here.
Hell yes.
Yeah, definitely. Alicia, I'm totally on board. Like that's, people get it. Like, I think that there's some sort of like spiritual current that they're tapping into. Like, yeah, we do have a privilege asking these questions, as does like our like political leaders and our community thought leaders do in framing what the message is, what the questions are. You don't have to answer our questions. You can ask yourself your own questions. We want you to ask yourself your own questions. That makes us excited. That means that we've done our job. That's the point.
Do you have any favorite answers that are up there? I like this, pleasure is always meaningful, whether, I can't read this word, whether superficial or profound, it's essential. All sex is risky, all life is risky, but without either, both are meaningless.
My favorite is just this cutesy one that says, with me it can, and has a smiley face under it, just because I think that this person does think about it in that way. Pleasure means something to him or to her, but for other folks, it might not. The pleasure, as we talked about, might only exist from a fear-based paradigm, from something that can exist behind a barrier through which you can't pass. We talked about like the metaphorical condom that exists in our relationship to sex across our lives. Seems like a lot of people. Duh is a pretty good one. That's a pretty good one. Yes, even if it's just for you.
And here's just straight up fact. It's like ejaculation clears and cleanses the prostate.
Nice. A nice WebMD response to our question up there. That's pretty good.
I like this one. So the question is, how would celebrating sex transform us as a community? And it said, as a society, it would reveal how queer we all are. Because that's something that I say. I feel like everybody is queer, but they just might not know it yet. And it's the truth when you stop thinking about sex in this very prescriptive, structured, rigid kind of way, then you're open to explore all of the possibilities, which in and of itself makes it queer, right? That it's open, that it's outside of the traditional norms, if you will. And I would venture to guess that most people, when it comes time to having sex, are straight up queer.
Fair enough. I mean, like, queer is like a queer word that, yeah, queer is by definition like not a specific thing. Like, it is whatever is not in the box, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so that's like an ever-changing line. I like this one. There's a couple actually here about it gives people something to look forward to. There's sex is a healing and spiritual experience for me that grounds me to loving life. Pleasure is my most pure spiritual experience. There's physical connection with my partner. Sex feels good, and that's meaning enough. Someone also just commented with multiple exclamation points that they had just had sex.
I like this one here that says, affirms my trans sense of gender. All of transitioning is bullshit without the sex magic that makes me trans. Very personalized answer, but I think that just touches on a topic, a concept that a lot of people don't consider. Not just for trans folks. I think that's pretty applicable to anybody. Yeah. Honestly, like there is something that keeps you free, keeps you porous, and allows you to be creative inside of yourself through having sex with others. It breaks down the barrier.
There's one here that says, I would like us to celebrate intimacy. We get enough sex. And then two people seconded and then thirded that, which is it's an interesting, because, yeah, we keep going back to, like, is sex just this list of things in an order and you go from one to two to three to four and then, yeah, you're done? Or what really is the purpose and how do you know that it counts? Does it count? Am I a virgin? Mm-hmm.
No, you're not. So I think for me, when I hear that, I somewhat agree, but I would like to challenge folks to say that because HIV, I think, has done a really terrible job about compartmentalizing sex and breaking us down into our body parts, right? So put a condom on that thing down there, right? Like, what do you have going on with that area down there? And it completely segregates people from our own bodies. And so when you have this sort of compartmentalization that happens with your sex and with your body. And then when you share that with somebody else, I think it just inherently takes away the intimacy that is possible, right? Because sex does become so mechanical. Sex is about what you do versus how you are, right? Sex and intimacy, you know, I think intrinsically go hand in hand when we have fully integrated ourselves in our own body, and that when we're able to share that fully integrated self with somebody else. So I think that the way to intimacy is sometimes through sex, but doesn't necessarily have to be. And I know that part of the group of Sexo, it's kind of become this own culture, yeah, as it is, like the group of us who have come together are coming together in all kinds of ways, and are having these conversations, which is to me like one of the most rewarding parts about being part of this project. It's not just an art exhibit. It's really getting in touch with each of us in a different way about like what we've learned, what our hangups are, what we're afraid of. You know, can we have intimacy without having, you know, sexual intercourse? What does that look like? How do I share your sexual energy without you, you know, penetrating me or coming inside of me? You know, what does that look like? So that to me is what the person commented on the sticky note, the sex magic, right? It's these conversations about sex and sharing sex with somebody that is completely separate from fucking.
I completely agree. And as I think about it now more through the conversations we've had, the Sexo team, I have a lot less sex now, but I have a lot more intimacy with people. So if I had to compartmentalize those ideas, actually, in fact, I have tons of sex all the time, so to speak. I enjoy people's presence sensorially on the intellectual level, spiritually, emotionally. They're always with me. I can keep them in my heart longer because the sex isn't stopping. It's happening with people and they don't even realize it, through conversations, through looking somebody dead in the eye, loving somebody through the stillness in my voice and the calmness in my eyes. That's all part of what happens in sex. I could say that in an erotic story, right? That would work if I were to write it down. But it happens in real time, always. And so, yeah, on the note of intimacy, sure, I agree. We have a ton of sex. There's lots of just like slapping genitals together. But then what can that be meaningful for somebody? And how does that exist outside of the bedroom?
I mean, I can think immediately, examples come to mind. Like when you do, you get that like that eye contact situation in just the right moment. Yeah. And I think about, I'll say that again.
The 5-second love affair. That's not mine. That's a story from somebody else's who will share it hopefully one day.
and then, okay, so this is like where my brain goes is to Kesha talking about how she had eye sex with Johnny Depp, and that counts. And I'm like, okay, that's sure. Yeah, I'm not gonna. Yeah, if you want to count that, I will not take that away from you. We've got more excitement. So Peter Land just came in. Remind the folks how you're a part of this.
Oh, back in the '90s, David Acosta, Kevin Kendall, and myself created or dreamed up a new way to sell condoms, one that wasn't villainizing, wasn't too directive, one that was embracing of Latino male body. It was a campaign for Latino men in particular. And it was in a time when there was a lot of fear and a lot of death and a lot of fear. I lost 18 friends that year. And my lover, Kevin, who was part of this project, died a year after this was published from related to AIDS. So, you know, it was a very interesting process shooting this what I is still revolutionary, but at the time was really revolutionary campaign. One of my things that I was really adamant about is not, even though it was we were being funded to sell condoms, was to open up a space so that it wasn't just about condoms. It wasn't about a directive that said, you know, you're not having meaningful sex unless you have condoms in this age of fear and death. And we took the steps to eroticize something beyond that in-between space before you even get to the point of a condom. Is what is sexy about being a male figure in a marginalized community? And this is the outcome, is these three posters, which have a history of their own. I mean, first of all, you know, it's hard to find talent in Philadelphia.
These are all Philly.
No, they're not. We found them. We did the casting call at Industrious Super Studios up in New York, with the help of many New York people. And they came down and we shot it here, I think in the summer of 1992. And The shower scene was shot in the Sporting Club. This was shot in my studio down in Delaware Avenue at the time, and I can't remember the pool. It was a straight couple. I can't remember where it was. It was out in the mainline area where we had that location.
Awesome. No, I want to tell you, you'll hear this if you listen to the podcast, but yeah, these look like they were shot 2 days ago.
Well, yeah, we were very, very adamant that we wanted to create a campaign that brought art into the places that, what, as I said, probably one of these quotes, in the dark and dirty places that we called home, the places that we really love. We wanted to put really beautiful work that would be inspiring and not just a directive. And in fact, that they were taken down and they've spread around the world. And to this day, you can still find them in places and people remember them. And so in a way, it was, from my perspective, looking at the social media landscape we live in now, it was a very successful social media campaign. But at the time, it was seen that when the posters were being stolen, quote unquote, that was a problem. It was a budget problem, and it was wrong. And also the printer that printed it, the staff walked off, and the owner had to print it on the weekend with his partner. And the city law department decided it was sexual harassment in the workplace and decided that they would be banned from all city accommodations. So this campaign has started with controversy, but has maintained its relevancy because of its very authentic nature to male sexuality and honesty and authenticity to how we love and to want to be with each other. And it's just the beginning. And this is the point of Sexo. It was what we thought then would be the beginning of a continuing conversation was so mirrored with Jesse Helms at the time citing this among many others as reasons why public money should not be put into promoting homosexuality. I mean, this campaign is responsible for why agencies that get federal funding don't have free speech in some of these areas anymore. So a part of me says, you know, we need to keep doing this as a community. We have to stop relying on government resources to be able to speak. We have to be able to communicate organically in our small communities and be able to say what's really on our minds. We cannot let government tell us what's right or wrong when it comes to our bodies.
So you say this is the beginning. Where is the trajectory headed?
Sexo, the reason why it's not Sexo Latex today, Sexo is the trajectory it's moving. And so it's moving beyond gay men or Latino gay men. It's moving into all areas of sexuality, including our allies, straight people. And creating an open conversation, which is the one thing we all have in common, how we have sex and how we love each other. But for some reason, we've bifurcated this into some medical condition. And it's framed within fear. It's framed within everything but what sex is meant to be, which is a place to really get to know and love each other and to really exchange and understand the meaning of community. Touch.
Amazeballs. So obviously, we fully think everybody should come check this out because this is cool. This is, and it's easy to get to if you're in Philly. This is, we're at 13th and Spruce. It's so handy. Just come down here. But aside from that, it's going to be running through June, correct?
June 12th.
Okay. So aside from that, how else can people learn more about this exhibit, about Sexo, about all of the things that we've been talking about so far?
Well, there's a couple ways. One way is to like us on Facebook. There's this community page called Sexo Latex. But almost more importantly is to bring these conversations to a space that we've created under sexolatex.com. And that's a space that's sort of like a virtual embodiment of this physical space. And it allows participants to see some of these, actually more than four questions that are currently on the wall here at the exhibit, the physical exhibit, more questions to ponder, to think about, and to share them and to answer and to create conversations amongst their peer groups. And that website will continue to grow past this initial exhibit. And we intend to put more media and more tools for sharing and creating conversations and announce and talk about other future exhibits, physical gatherings, or community-based conversations that we intend to hold in the near future.
So one of the things that we're hoping to do, which I might have already mentioned, is that we want to commission artists to reimagine what Sexo looks like now, right, in 2013, so that it's more representative of all genders, of all sexual orientations and identities, and is more expansive than just quote-unquote safe sex, and really representative of how the wall over here is represented in terms of how our community is interacting with us and how they're describing sex, and how they see that, you know, how they see that pleasure can be meaningful, how they think that sex can transform our communities. We want that to be reflective in art in some capacity at some point within the next several months.
Hey, artists, start thinking, do some stuff. All right. Well, I want to thank all three of you for your time. And this is amazing. Everyone should definitely check this out and check out the website and check out the Facebook page and interact in other ways. Y'all on Twitter?
I'm personally on Twitter. I think there's a
Pleasure Rush is on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. You can hashtag sexolatex and talk about like, yeah, so I went in there and I wrote some crazy stuff and... All right. Yeah. So I want to thank Peter Leanne, Alicia Gonzalez, and Aaron Stella. This has been totally rad. So thank you very much for letting me into Sex Church here. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's amazing. And thank you all very much for listening and have a good day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.